Welcome, and thank you for standing by. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. During the question and answer session, you may press star one on your touch-tone phone. Today's conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. I'll turn the meeting over to your host for today's conference, the Secretary of Labor, Hilda Solis. You may begin.
Good morning, everyone, and I want to thank you for joining this very important call. As you may know, for almost 30 years, the Occupational Safety and Health Administration's Hazardous Communication Standard has protected workers by giving them the right to know about potential hazards of chemicals in the workplace. These chemicals are found across a broad spectrum of industries and workplaces, and the standard covers more than 43 million workers. But today, I'm particularly pleased to announce a new system that will deliver hazard information to these workers more simply, clearly, and effectively. The globally harmonized system of classification and labeling of chemicals is a result of an unprecedented international effort to establish a common framework for chemical hazard communication. It provides a single set of harmonized criteria for classifying chemicals according to their health and physical hazards, and specifies the elements that must be included in labeling and safety data sheets. The updates to the Hazard Communication Standard will be announced today will align our current procedures with this global framework. With these changes, workers will have a better understanding of the possible dangers of substances in their work environment and make it easier for employers to comply with the standard. That's why we're calling it the right to understand. We estimate that this new right will prevent more than 500 injuries and illnesses and save 43 lives each year. That's a win, not only for people, but for businesses too. The revised rule will save American businesses that handle, store, and use hazardous chemicals $475.2 million in productivity improvements. Additionally, the rule will result in cost savings of $32.2 million for American businesses that periodically update safety data sheets and labels for chemicals covered. It will lift barriers to trade by establishing a common system with our countries that we work with, like the European Union, Australia, Japan, Canada, and China. When President Obama ordered an analysis of existing regulations last January to determine whether they were overly burdensome, this is exactly the type of action he had in mind. The right to know has protected millions of workers in its time, but we recognize that we must do more to meet the challenges of a new international marketplace. For that reason, the right to understand gives workers a deeper and more comprehensive level of protection. It empowers them with the best information available about the chemicals that they handle. This information will reduce confusion in the workplace, especially for low-wage and low-literacy workers, whether it's during a safety or health training session or in response to an emergency. This is critical to making sure every worker in every community stays safe on the job. And I'm so proud that because of our actions today, so many workers will now have a better understanding of their work environment. That understanding is powerful and perhaps the single most effective tool workers have to protect themselves from harm. Now, it is my pleasure to introduce Dr. David Michaels, Assistant Secretary for OSHA, who will tell you more about the revised rule and introduce his staff who will be answering your questions today. Dr. Michaels.
Thank you very much, Secretary Solis. Thank you all for joining us today on the phone. This is a very exciting day for OSHA. We've been working on this standard for quite some time. Some people think, well, how important is the labeling standard? It is very important to workers, to manufacturers, and to employers who purchase materials that are hazardous, and it will help all of them. It really is, as the Secretary said, sort of a win-win for all of these groups. But to give you a little background, in 1983, OSHA issued our Hazard Communication Standard. We abbreviated it HAZCOM. A fundamental change occurred in the workplace with HAZCOM. Before that, workers didn't have the right to know the names of the chemicals they work with or what the products were. And what would happen is a worker would say, well, what's in that barrel over there? What's that liquid? And in many cases, their employer didn't know either. With HAZCOM came the right to know. Materials had to be labeled. Material safety data sheets were available. Over the years, it became very clear that the HAZCOM standard was, while very important, also not adequate to deal with certain sorts of problems. And it provided a great deal of flexibility, to the manufacturers on how to communicate that information. In fact, too much flexibility. And so you had inconsistency, you had inaccuracy, you had a great deal of difficulty reading these materials, material safety data sheets, and understanding the labels. That impacted workers who had trouble finding the information they needed. It equally impacted employers, especially small employers, who would purchase these chemicals and have to learn how to read all these different material safety data sheets with different formats, different ways to convey information, to figure out what sort of protections to put in place. This changes all that, and as Secretary Solis said, this has moved from the right to know to the right to understand. The requirements here are consistency, accuracy. All safety data sheets that come through this should contain the same information, and it should be conveyed with pictograms so it's easily understood by workers, by small employers, by everybody who needs to know the information that's in that. So it will help us protect workers, because hazard communication is really the fundamental basis for chemical hazard protection programs. And this will improve chemical hazard protection programs across the country. In addition, though, it will be of great assistance to our manufacturers who compete overseas. Because the way it works right now is if a company manufactures a chemical product in Europe and puts on the labeling and the safety data sheet required in Europe, that can be sold here because it fits into our very flexible old HAZCOM standards. But employers or manufacturers who make products here have to then spend a great deal of time changing those material safety data sheets to meet European requirements. So what this is doing is leveling the playing field. And as President Obama has said, if the playing field is level, U.S. manufacturers can compete and we can win. So we think this is a great step forward for OSHA, for the employers and workers in the United States, and I'm pleased to answer any questions you have.
If you would like to ask a question, you may press star 1. Please record your first and your last name clearly when prompted. To withdraw your request, you may press star 2. One moment, please. Our first question is from Sam Hananel from the Associated Press. Your line is open.
Hi, everyone. I wanted to ask, this rule has been proposed now, I guess, about 3 years ago. Why did it take 3 years to get this rule passed?
You know, the OSHA standard setting process, or the process that OSHA goes through to set standards, even non-controversial standards, is quite lengthy. We have to do extended analyses. We look at feasibility issues. We do several sets of public comments. We meet with stakeholders on many different levels, and we get tremendous amount of input. And that's the process that we go through for all of our standards. And so this isn't a particularly slow standard. In fact, this one moved relatively quickly.
Okay, did it change at all after the directive last year to streamline regulations that are burdensome?
Well, yeah, that occurred during the process, and we were looking at it at that time, and that certainly gave us a sense of urgency. You know, we're moving in this direction, and we're very pleased to align this with the president's efforts, because it really did sit very well.
Okay, thank you.
Our next question is from Christopher Cole from Inside OSHA. Your line is open.
Hi, good morning. I just had a couple of quick issues to ask about. Have TLVs been included either in the standard for hazard determination or required on the new data sheets or both? What was the rationale for that decision? And second is non-classified hazards category included in the rule? And how does the rule address the question of covering combustible dust hazards?
Okay, I'll take them one at a time. The combustible dust requirement really is unchanged from what we've been doing for the last 25 years. issues have come up in combustible dust explosions on a very regular basis. Their workers and employers didn't know that the dust that they were dealing with were combustible. That happened, for example, in some of the explosions involving sugar, where numerous workers were killed. And so we continue to cover combustible dust under GHS, and the guidance we have elsewhere continues to apply. So we expect combustible dust to be covered really the same way. The TLVs are on. We do include the TLVs. Now, for those of you, this is sort of in the weeds for people who may not be following this, but TLVs, threshold limit values, are levels that are recommended by the American Conference of Government Industrial Hygienists as levels, as occupational exposure limits for workplaces. They were under the old HAZCOM standard. We required them, that they had to be on the material safety data sheet, and now we are asking, requiring that they be on the safety data sheet. We received comments pointing out the importance of these ACGI standard proposals, and we elected to include them. It was based on our record. Now, part of the reason for that is that many of the OSHA PELs, permissible exposure limits, are quite out of date, and it's very important to get complete information out to workers and to employers so that they can protect themselves.
Am I still on the line?
Yes.
Yes. Is there actually spelled out an unclassified hazards category per se?
Yes. Yes. I'm sorry. I forgot that. Yes. There is. This is for specific for hazards that are not that really are aren't otherwise classified that don't fit into the other categories. We've gone from the proposal to the final. Removing certain types of recognized hazards and taking them out of the unclassified hazards as a result of what we received in the record. But there still is unclassified hazard category, which manufacturers will be able to put materials in as they develop them if we don't have information about them.
So the combustible dust would be under the unclassified hazards, though?
But now we're calling it not otherwise classified. We're calling it hazards not otherwise classified.
Not otherwise classified.
Right. It's no longer called unclassified, but it's not otherwise classified.
I see. And that combustible dust would fall under that if you were applying it.
No, because that is otherwise classified.
Okay, thank you.
Our next question is from Greg Hellman of Bloomberg. Your line is open.
Hi, Dr. Michaels. Am I online here?
Yes.
Great. I'm wondering if you can just clarify some of your comments about combustible dust here. So combustible dust will not fall under the hazards not otherwise classified category. What category would it fall under then?
Combustible dust.
Combustible dust. There's a separate category for combustible dust now.
And there'll be a – right. That's correct.
Great. The other point I wanted to ask about was the implementation dates. I know in the proposal, you can correct me if I'm wrong, I believe it was a two-year implementation date. I'm wondering if that has changed and what those dates are under the final rule.
The effective date will be December 1st, 2013, to train employees on new label elements and the format. And that's because right now they're already seeing these new labels, the safety data sheets, from many manufacturers. So December 2013 would be the date that the training should be done by. The next key date is June 1st, 2015, where manufacturers and importers will have to comply with the modified provisions of the final rule, except for certain distributors who can ship products labeled under the old system for another 6 months. I know this is really in the weeds, but that's December 1st, 2015.
Great.
And then employers will have until June 2016 to update alternative workplace labeling and health communication programs as necessary. That data I gave you before, the June 1st, 2015, is also it's the EU date for the implementation. It's when the EU will implement their rules on mixtures, and so this harmonizes with them. There are a bunch of different dates in there.
Great. Thank you.
Really, we stretch out for 4 years here in implementation.
Can I ask one more question here?
Go ahead.
Yeah. Just going back to the combustible dust issue real quick, I'm wondering if you can respond to some criticisms from industry that this is a quote-unquote backdoor combustible dust rule.
We're considering combustible dust exactly the way we've considered for 25 years. We have guidance out there of information that has to be provided to workers about combustible dust under HAZCOM, and this really just continues exactly that.
Great. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Our next question is from Elizabeth Grossman of Chemical Watch. Your line is open.
Yes, thank you. Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Okay. Thank you, Dr. Michaels. The question I have is about how and where and by whom decisions are made as to what constitutes a hazardous material, and if there is some overriding list of materials, and if so, how substances get added to that?
Well, all substances should be part of this. It's the manufacturer, though, who has to make the decision about what the hazards are, though. And they have to do the classifying. And they produce the material, the safety data sheet, and the label.
I see. So that would leave some substances considered hazardous by some jurisdictions, but not others. So how would this harmonize a substance where there's some disagreement about hazards?
Well, this is the requirement on the label or on the safety data sheet. And so the manufacturer actually has to follow certain criteria that are very straightforward, that are in this and in and in the EU's requirements as well, to follow this criteria. And so theoretically, it should lead consistency across different manufacturers as well. That all gets laid out, saying this is the sort of algorithms you have to follow to come up with what pictograms and what signal words to use. The other issue, of course, is what levels people can be exposed to, and that's one of the reasons that we include information, for example, the ACGIH-TLV, which is not a number set by a manufacturer but set by this independent organization.
And I guess one of the things I'm curious about is how the GHS labeling might encompass potential hazards from substances like endocrine disruptors, about which there's not yet regulatory definition agreement.
At this point, I think, given the controversies around that, we have this unclassified hazards.
Okay.
Not otherwise classified. Hazards not otherwise classified. And our view of this is as the science develops, there'll be the ability to develop new categories that then can be provided on.
Got it. Thank you.
Our next question is from Kyle Morrison of Safe and Health Magazine. Your line is open.
Great. Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Michaels. OMB held numerous hearings, meetings with stakeholders over the last few months about this rule. What from those meetings, if anything, helped shape the final rule that came out today?
Well, we've been working on this rule for years and taking stakeholder comments. It's hard to identify what specifically came from specific meetings, but we're always happy to hear from stakeholders shaping this document to ensure that this really is a standard that helps everybody. And we think we've reached that point. We're very pleased with the outcome of this.
So those meetings the last few months, I guess what purpose did they have then? If this is something that you've been working on for the last several years and these meetings were held in the last 3 or 4 months, what were they able to contribute?
Well, Well, they still contribute. If we're always open to getting more evidence, particularly empirical evidence, and you know, we certainly encourage stakeholders in our processes to give it to bring those to us. And the White House has other ways they gather information. And, you know, we went to those meetings, we listened, and we took what was necessary. We thought from those meetings.
But was there anything specific that stood out from those meetings that you took then?
No, we're looking at the whole package. This is the way it always works. We work with other agencies. We work with OMB. We look at all the data, and we come up with something that we all really think is the conclusion we want to be at. So this is pretty standard.
Okay. Thank you.
Our next question is from Jerry Laws from the Occupational Safety and Health magazine.
Thank you, and good morning, everybody. Thank you for holding this teleconference, by the way. There's been speculation by Aaron Tripler, the Government Affairs Director for AIHA, among others, that this will be the only significant rulemaking OSHA is able to enact or issue this year. First, do you agree with that, Dr. Michaels? And second, there's also speculation currently about whether you would stay on at the helm of OSHA should there be a second Obama administration. What do you have to say about that, please?
I think that we'll talk about that if later on in the year. But, we have plans to issue more regulations. We've got a number of things in the pipeline. And, you know, I can never say it's going to come out until it comes out, but we're hopeful we'll be getting some more things out.
Anything, any specifics? What would you like most to see?
You know, we're working hard on electrical power transmission. Hopefully we'll get, you know, it's a very complex, it's an important standard, but it's a very complex one. And so if we can finish it up this year, we will.
Okay.
I want to let everyone know, by the way, the webpage with all this, a lot of background information about the GHS, you know, HAZCOM standard is up, linking to background materials and to the actual standard. So if you haven't seen that, please go there. Now we have quick cards. We've got sample labels. We've got lots of information up there.
Very good. Thank
you. One thing that we've really made a very big effort on for this rollout and for the standard is getting material out in Spanish. Now, one of the purposes of HAZCOM is to get information out to workers in a way that they can understand it. And so the move to pictograms, we think, is a huge leap forward. It will help workers who either don't speak English as a native language or are low literacy. In addition, though, we've put together materials about the standard and about how to understand some of this information in Spanish because we know there are a lot of Spanish-speaking workers who can use that information.
Our next question is from Brad Harbo of MSDS Online. Your line is open.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Michaels, for taking the questions. I have just a couple of questions. The first one is, OSHA decided to go with Revision 3. I'm curious why you chose Revision 3 over Revision 4, and do you have plans to move to Revision 4 anytime soon?
No, it's just a question of timing. You know, this whole process is a living process. We are continuing part, you know, there are global negotiations going on ways to improve it, to move it forward, to reflect scientific advances. And so it made sense for us to go with Revision 3 in terms of getting out our standard, but we're very much involved in this international process, and we will continue to improve our standards.
Great. And then one of the things that we saw in the proposal was that OSHA was going to go with a red border, require a red border on labels, when in the GHS guidelines as provided by the United Nations, they were permitting a black border on domestic shipments. Did you indeed go with a red border for domestic shipments and international shipments?
Yes.
Okay, great. Then one of the questions we've been receiving a lot from customers is questions about the safety data sheet churn. Please go ahead.
I missed your question. The safety data sheet what?
Oh, safety data sheet churn. With that's what we're calling it. As companies, manufacturers update their safety data sheets and their labels, employers will start seeing these coming in. Some are already seeing them coming into their facilities.
Yes.
But for those companies who have older chemicals where maybe the manufacturer is out of business or they're no longer receiving shipments and won't be able to receive those safety data sheets, will those chemicals be grandfathered in or after the, you know, the three-year window, will they be required to have updated labels and safety data sheets for those older chemicals?
No, they'll be grandfathered in.
Okay, great. And then my final question is regarding the classification. The numbers used in GHS, the greater the severity, the lower the number, which is different from NFPA and HMIS labels. And I know you guys received some pushback on that from different stakeholders. What was the final outcome regarding that? And do you have any guidance to provide folks who use NFPA and HMIS?
Hang on. This is really not an issue that I've spent much time dealing with, so I'm going to try to get you some information on this.
I appreciate it. Thank you for your time.
Our next question is from Chris.
Yeah, let's take your question, and we'll come back to the other one.
Our next question is from Chris Scott from Meeting Place Magazine. Your line is open.
Thank you, and good morning. You answered my question already on the timetable, but I wanted to ask from the user's perspective, we covered the meat industry, and they are obviously users of anhydrous ammonia and other refrigerants. Are these labels or going to contain information on emergencies and how workers should respond, or will that be contained in the data sheets?
Yeah, it's really a combination of the two. But, you know, the label, when material is shipped, there are certain labeling requirements. But, you know, a lot of that, those requirements are actually DOT requirements as well, where DOT has requirements for shipping.
Okay.
But then there'll be material safety, there will be safety data sheet requirements as well with a lot of that basic information.
Terrific. That's actually all I need. Thank you.
Back to the question we did before, which is really what we were thinking about is, and maybe there's a confusion between what's a rating system versus a classification system. And people who are using it will continue to be using the system just as they always have been. So we think that's going to handle it well. Time for one more question.
Well. One moment, please. Our next question is from Desmond Waite of Corner Publications. Your line is open.
Good afternoon from the UK.
Oh, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. One, do you have a short title for your communication standard, rather like the EU CLP is commonly used?
Yeah, HAZCOM.
But that's the same as your old title in a sense.
This is an update, but the basic idea, this replaces HAZCOM, so it's still, we could call it HAZCOM. We sometimes call it GHS, but that's not really illustrative of what's in there. This is about hazard communication, so it's a hazard communication standard.
So you're not calling it HAZCOM 212 or anything like that to differentiate it?
Right.
Some of our guidance will say that.
All right, so yes, we do actually have some guidance which will say HAZCOM 2012. So
okay, fine, thank you. And if I may, a quick second question.
Sure.
I believe your scheme doesn't cover environmental hazards. Won't this make it difficult for your exporters who then find that their labeling is short of the requirements in other...
No, EPA takes lead on that, and they're getting there. But right now, they can put this on there now, and there won't be any... They won't be out of compliance if they do that. And so I think that's the idea.
Okay, thank you.
Let me sum up here. This, you know, to us, this is a great advance. One of the things we made very clear about this is we're not... In no area are we offering less protection to workers, less information for users, and this will improve our ability to compete overseas. So we think it's a win-win-win, and we're very excited about it, and we look forward to getting information out about it. Great. Thank you all for taking this call.
Thank you. This concludes today's presentation. You may disconnect at this time.